As we gather here today to celebrate Beltane, I wish to steer our thoughts and hearts towards our relationship with nature. Beltane was traditionally celebrated as the festival of the fire, of the bright fire, whose smoke, blessed with healing properties, would cleanse cattle and cattle herders alike as they ventured into the summer pastures to graze. Today, most, if not all of us, are not cattle herders, nor do our lives revolve around pastoral schedules or nomadic wanderings. Instead, we are people of habit, well-kept, nourished, and entertained with technological fancies for our every whim. We need not pay attention to when the sun sets, nor when the moon is full, as we have electricity to light up our rooms 24 hours a day. We need not hunt nor grow food, for everything is now available for our convenience in supermarkets with conditioned air. And yet, we can all connect with this idea of venturing outdoors again. From leaving the comfort and shelter of our winter abodes to explore the flowering bloom of spring. Who here has not recently felt that twinge of excitement in seeing those cherry trees blossom again? From leaving and smelling those sidewalk tulips and taking those Sunday walks in the Wissahickon and dancing to the dawn choir of birdsong. We may not be cattle herders anymore, but we are all still akin to the seasons, still affected by the changes and the desires to be outdoors again. So today we not only celebrate the coming of spring and the foreseeable summer ahead, but we also acknowledge in ourselves our desire to be outdoors again, for our animality to spring forth as we play outside, smell flowers, sing with the birds, and chase dandelion seeds across parks and yards alike. For this is our nature, to be outside. And here we are again at the cusp of seasonal warmth and frivolity, and we feel the urge to play again, to be who and what we were born to be. Not humans with all our constructs and dogma, but playful animals at play, in play. We need this because we are this. We're as much nature as anything else that springs forth from the earth, and yet we deny ourselves of this very right. Instead of seeking nature in ourselves, we seek nature someplace else. The yard, the park, the forest, the mountains, the lakes. And so, when this time comes around again, we remember what we really want is to be outside and not cooped up in a room with a light and a sofa and a TV. We want intimacy again with all things. We want relationships. We want companionship. We want our natural desires to be met, tickled, stimulated, and indulged as much as we want to see and smell the delights of a changing season. So today, as we celebrate Beltane, we also celebrate our return to nature, not only in being outdoors again, but also in our return to embracing ourselves as nature. This is our rekindling of our memory, to remember what and who we are as children of nature and as earthlings, with a need to be intimately central in as many ways as possible with each other and the earth, the only home we have ever known.
I don't like to be tied to behind a podium. Lagoma, Granye, Ursula. That is the ancient Irish language that is still spoken today in pockets of Western Ireland, and it means good day, noble people. And what I like about that ancient Irish greeting that they still use today in their native language is that it is so inclusive of all people. Instead of saying ladies and gentlemen, and I always ask, and what about the rest of us who are not quite a binary, right? Who might find ourselves both or in between or outside of the quote-unquote norm. Grania Ushla, noble people, covers that because it involves everybody. And not only is that greeting inclusive, but it is also egalitarian because it calls everybody noble. The ancient Irish noticed the inherent dignity of all people. All people have a nobility within them. You didn't need a title like Duchess or Duke or Earl. Everybody, because they are human beings, are noble. And it makes me proud to be Irish, to think of this egalitarianism and this acceptance of everybody's dignity. And I'm sure those of you who do have Celtic heritage of your own, Ireland, Scotland, and the Highlands, can be very proud of that about the Celtic people. And also about our love of nature. Because the Irish, the Celts, were not only egalitarian when it came to people, but it came to celebrating the wheel of the year. They were egalitarian too. They didn't just celebrate the sunny, bright, warm times of the year. They celebrated the dark, gloomy, cold times of the year as well. There were four holidays in the winter months and four holidays in the summer months. And two times during the year, when we went from light into dark at Samhain, now known as Halloween, or when we went from dark into light, that we now call May Day, or if we use the Irish term, Beltane. It was a time when the portals between the living and the dead, the realm of earth and the other world, could open. And the dead could walk once more among the living. And the living, if they were adventurous and so inclined, could enter into the realm of the dead. And the two could visit with each other once more. I think from Tom's speech, we all understand the idea of moving forward into the light and the gathering season element that Beltane represents, the first day of summer. We have gatherings too. We have folk festivals, music fairs. We have picnics, barbecues, block parties. It's very easy for modern-day Americans to see the connection with our Celtic ancestors of maybe 20 centuries ago. But this idea of the opening of the portal between the living and the dead, to some of us that might sound a little occult, a little too mystical for us. So how do modern Americans think of that? I myself am a secular humanist, but I am also a naturalistic pagan, which means that I am a non-theist who doesn't really believe in an afterlife or in a realm of the dead. So how can Beltane speak to me when it comes to opening the porthole between the living and the dead? And to me, it is as simple and as natural as opening a photo album and visiting once more with your grandparents, parents, aunts, uncles, maybe brothers and sisters, cousins, who have left us, who are no longer with us. And if you are really digitally inclined, You just open up your Google Drive to the photo file, and there you have pictures, videos of loved ones who might not be with us. And that is the way that today in our world we can open up the portholes between the living and the dead and walk with loved ones no longer with us once more. So Wednesday starts Samhain, and as most Celtic holidays are, they begin at sundown at the day before. So I would invite you, if you want to try to celebrate Beltane. If you want to try to celebrate Beltane in your own lives this year, after sundown on Tuesday, if you open up a photo album or open up your photo file on your computer and visit with loved ones who may not be with you. And then when you start the gathering season, the moving forward on Wednesday, a lot of us have to go to work or school, but after that, make plans not to go home. Meet a friend, meet a significant other, meet somebody, go out to dinner, have something social out among people, go to a film, or go to Wednesday at the art museum. It's pay what you want, and then you can have drinks there, and there's going to be a drawing class there this Wednesday. And the person who is running it is very influenced by a Japanese artist who is having an exhibition, and I forget his name right now. But what a wonderful way to celebrate those who have gone before us by taking a drawing class in the style of this great painter who lived a few centuries before, and connecting again, walking with the living and the dead, because our history and our present and our future is all connected, and we can walk in any time, at any time we want. Gormayaget, thank you. Grenya Ursula, noble people.
I used to think my great-grandmother was a witch. I never knew her, but my great-granddad used to tell us stories when we were kids. With just the contents of her tiny garden and the woods up the hill nearby, my great-grandmother, he said, could cure the sick, mend a twisted ankle, feed a family of six, survive the deaths of two infant sons, and serve as the emotional anchor of a vast extended family and neighborhood on the outskirts of a coal mining and steel town in western Pennsylvania. One day, their oldest son, my great-uncle Elmer, got poison ivy, and she made it disappear under a poultice of nettles, sorghum, and baking soda. Another time, my mother came down with 102 fever, and she soothed it away with lavender tea and lullabies. This same woman could take one of her own chickens from backyard to frying pan, literally with the flick of a wrist. And she could silence a bunch of rambunctious children with a single stern glance. Even if she wasn't a witch, she had some kind of magic. And it's the kind you want on your side in hard times, say during a Great Depression or a world war or, I don't know, a zombie apocalypse, or when climate change finally threatens to extinct us all. Armed with her pantry and a deep ancestral knowledge of her land and the cycles of the seasons, Anna Burkhart Riblett used her magic to do the right and loving thing, not the easy thing, and to nourish and strengthen her people and Mother Earth herself, even during times when it may have felt to her like it was all falling apart. Hers was the magic of the kitchen table and the farmer's almanac, the kind of magic that knows that a tea of fennel seed, bee balm, and birch syrup staves off a cold and eases an upset stomach, the kind of magic that yields abundant crops by planting seeds at the new moon, the kind of magic that happens when we simply follow the natural rhythms of life. In fact, planting, harvesting, and working with the local flora is quite practical, and much of its apparent magic has been verified now by science. Dandelion greens are high in vitamins A, C, and K, as well as magnesium, potassium, zinc, iron, calcium, and choline, and the roots are a natural diuretic. Bee balm, as the name suggests, has antispasmodic and anti-inflammatory properties. Penn State Hershey Medical Center reports research finding that lemon balm has antimicrobial activity high enough to treat staph infections, and one study even suggests it may be useful in treating Alzheimer's disease. The Journal of the Royal Pharmaceutical Society published a study of betulinic acid made from birch bark, finding that it inhibits the growth of prostate cancer cells without any apparent effect on the surrounding healthy cells. The ability to create healing teas, tinctures, and salves from nature only seems magical to us because we've come to overvalue the wisdom of Western medicine and at the same time forgotten how much we depend on nature for our own survival. As you now know, in ancient traditions across Europe, in the spring, tribes would gather and take their cattle from the barns where they wintered, march them ceremonially before a huge signal fire while praying for their blessing and protection, and put them out to pasture. Some of the folks would then cull birch trees for making canoes, baskets, and medicines. Meanwhile, householders would be sweeping out the hearth and shaking out all the textiles, clearing the living spaces of all the soot and dust that had collected through the winter. The Celts called these and related traditions Beltane. We just called it spring cleaning. Because after the heathen, those are the people of the heath in ancient Celtic lands, so named as an epithet by the people of the towns to set themselves apart. After the heathen came the hillbilly. When I was a kid, decades after Anna was gone, spring cleaning was still a big deal. It was like a big family event. Curtains would come down for cleaning and pressing. Ovens were scrubbed. Items everywhere from attics to basements were carefully considered, deemed useful or not, and either spruced up and kept, repurposed, put in a pile for donations or the traditional hand-me-downs. As one of the youngest, I got a lot of those. Or simply thrown out. My cousins and I would go out with my grandfather and pick piles of dandelions and watercress for salads and for wine that only he could drink. Traditions like these, whether they come from immediate family, from Appalachia, from the ancient Celts, or any of the multitude of mythologies and practices around the world, are not merely a way to take care of the business of living or even to reaffirm a cultural or family identity. They are a way to acknowledge that we are not alone. Together in community, or remembering ancestors, or planning for the generations to come, when we allow space for that otherness, then we cannot but release, recycle, and reuse the stuff of life that can choke out our own growth and make room for all that needs to be seen and heard. This applies not just for stuff, but to all that attaches itself to us, at which we grasp: habits, people, places, ideologies, beliefs, thoughts. Not to just trade them out like we're swapping the perfectly good shoes or phone we just happen to be bored with for the shiny new ones that have captivated us for the moment, but a deliberate consideration. Does this help me? Will it make me a stronger, kinder person? Does it serve those I care for? Was my great-grandmother a witch? Insofar as she repeatedly made something out of apparently nothing, sure. Chances are, though, you have an Anna Burkhart Riblet who may or may not have been a witch somewhere in your family, too. And we need their magic, their awakeness to the earth, and their fierce love, now more than ever.
Thank you, Tom, Dusty, and Meg. Please rise in body or spirit to join us in our hymn, Mother Earth, Beloved Garden, number 1067, found in your teal hymnal.